in mine.
So, Vivian, what aspects of reimagining were most significant to you and why?
Well, I think the support, the ability to work on things together, that was, to me, I'm not long on a lot of yik-yak or talk. I want to get things done.
Right,
so
right.
I'm a pragmatist, so if the talk leads to something, I'm okay with it.
Right.
But, you know, it was like, for a lot of people, they just weren't ready for people to be as cruel to them as they were.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And in our case at the college, people stopped talking to us.
Oh.
And I was in a department where that did not happen, but one of the other women was in a department where she was chairing the department.
Oh, my goodness.
And everybody stopped talking to her.
Oh, that would be awful.
Yeah. So she had to step down and, you know, give the chair over to somebody else.
Oh, awful. Mm-hmm. Did your involvement in reimagining change your perspective at all on feminist theology and or on the church?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Because at this point, certain things had settled in into my bones at that point, if you will. And my mother had started calling herself a feminist.
Had she? Oh, I love it. That's great.
And so she was involved in some church work. But, you know, in the Black Lutheran Church, women ran the church.
Is that right? Yeah.
That's who was in the pew. It was like, just like it is with the white women. But pastor didn't do anything without coming past the ladies in the church. I mean, because they raised the money for this, they raised the money for that, you know, blah, blah, blah. They taught, they did all the work.
Yes.
And not all the work. Of course, men were part of this, but the majority of the people were women.
Yes.
And so the Black church, women speak out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there was no such thing as somebody saying, sister, whatever, you can't talk here. And, you know, and when white people would come from other church, and we'd have a congregational meeting afterwards, and I guess my dad was ahead of his time, too, in this regard, but you know, women talked, women voted.
I
was like, really?
Yes.
I didn't know anything else. So.
Right, yes.
So, yeah, so actually seeing that people had to make choices about things, that helped me understand more about why white women were more forthcoming.
Mm. Say some more about that.
In other words, when I saw how white women could be punished by white people, other white women and white men, because it wasn't part of the culture.
Right.
Then I began to understand that why they weren't always, you know, front and center, you know, supporting you or me or whatever.
Yes.
Because they couldn't support themselves.
Huh. Wow. That's. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. A part of me really, I think, became much more forgiving, if you will, as a result of that experience. Because, you know, once you got to know someone, a person with a name and a face, you know, not just Reverend Molly's picture here or there or whatever, it made a difference.
Yes.
It made a difference. And so that whole business of showing up, this was all a part of, for me, showing up.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh, glad you did.
Yeah.
Getting near the end here. Mm-hmm. In the end, what do you think is the greatest legacy of the reimagining community?
Oh, yeah. I think the greatest legacy of this, and I teach now, I've been teaching for a number of years now, at Luther Seminary.
Yes.
And the greatest legacy of this for me is young white males who come into class already feminized.
Mm.
I mean, really. And who take on other males who aren't there. And you don't have to do that work.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. That's the greatest legacy to me.
Yes.
Is that the other side of the equation, for the most part, get it, understand it, and are partnering with, are partnering. And we have, now we have more women than men, okay? Mm. And now we have more clergy couples than the church ever had. And women are willing to serve these little, 5-point parishes and 3-point parishes that we couldn't bring enough men in to do.
Right.
And also one of the things that that Reimagining has done is that it has given us more seasoned clergy who are choosing this as a second or third career.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real blessing.
You know, some of the goals of Reimagining were to bring mm-hmm. inclusive or expansive mm-hmm. language into mm-hmm. the church and feminist theology. Mm-hmm. What is your perception of how that is today?
Oh, I think we're getting there.
All right, do you? Yes,
really do.
Yes.
The reason I say this is because if you can believe it, see, in the first instance, as you know, coming up Lutheran, we didn't even cross synodical lines.
Right.
We did not mm-hmm. cross synodical lines. And it was said many times, oh, they're too liberal, they're going to hell.
Right.
They're going to burn in hellfire.
Yep.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Turn or burn, honey. So it was like... And so if we thought that way about other Lutherans, I mean, how far out were the Jews and Muslims and this and that? Okay, in the Civil Rights Movement, which I contend was the most ecumenical movement in this country's history.
Yes.
My dad had to be alongside other people. He, we were taught not to talk to Catholic kids before all of that happened.
Right. Yes.
Okay, so here he is marching with the Catholics and the this and the that. He was driving the church people crazy. I mean, because of the religious nature of the movement.
Right.
That it was opening doors to other people. You're going to, well, next thing you know, you're going to be preaching Judaism. Guess what? We already do. and Dan always had such a great sense of humor. But the point that I'm making here is that this opened the doors for us as women to be way more ecumenical than our churches were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because this battle was being fought all around the world, everywhere you went. And of course, the interesting part about the Mexico meeting was we didn't have a track that was for religious. We just had the NGOs.
Ah.
And so the religious had to get themselves together on their own. And I had enough money for my denomination to actually bring somebody with me to the conference, and stuff like that. And so when we went to Denmark, the church was, the Danish church allowed me to open the Danish church to have a meeting place.
Mm.
The NGOs didn't have a meeting place. We were always scrambling for a meeting place.
Oh, wow.
So we, and we learned interesting things like people had come without knowing how expensive it was going to be. And of course, I have to say there were all kinds of classes who were there at this meetings. And so by the time we got to the second meeting, which was 5 years in, we had had meetings at the White House. We had had all kinds of meetings. Yeah. And so we were much better prepared at that point. And so we brought back, and so my Lutheran sisters, everybody but the Missouri Synod,
mm-hmm.
They were all at the Danish convention. And coming back, and the Methodists, everybody was there, So, and the Baptists, and this and that. And so we got to see worldwide and experience worldwide the struggles of the women in Asia, the struggles of the women here, and every day after our meetings with NGO, we could come to the church, we could have meals together, you know, all sorts of really wonderful things. So we were able to process this as world women, if you will, world religious women, and know that it was better in some places, worse in others. So being hosted by the Danish Church made quite a...
That's amazing.
Quite, yeah. And anyway, long and short, so for me, this was really kind of my rootedness, if you will, going out to the larger world and back again. And each time you make one of those journeys, your faith is challenged and supported in ways that you never thought it would be. Okay, so I used to say when I was a church executive that God was a black woman with a big purse, and she did not like ugly. And she'd smack you with that purse.
I love it.
And one of my, it was really funny. Somebody sent me a cartoon, and it was this pastor just whipping this, that, and there was this purse coming out of a cow.
Perfect.
Yeah, I kept it forever. But
I love that image.
I knew that we were someplace different when our... when our seminary, the whole seminary, read The Shack.
Oh.
And had two of us talking about it, and one being non-Lutheran and me. I mean, that covers so many bases that I have to unpack it a little bit. One is, nobody ever thought of a woman, you know, until we started all this woman talk, if you will. And thinking about God, the Godhead as not being male, except in the person of Jesus. And those are hard, hard images to get out of people's minds. And then finally, we were reading a piece of literature, which I was a bestseller, but I thought it was badly written, but that's neither here nor there. But where God is a black woman. Okay,
yes.
So that opened windows and doors that we couldn't get through with even me as a student, art student, painting Jesus as a Jewish man with black hair and olive complexion and modern dress and a jean jacket, to be exact. This opened up the ability to think about God in a different way, where these two things intersect.
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
yes.
So for that, I felt that we made great strides. And I teach with a woman who is head of a department. I repeat, head of a department at Luther Seminary. And she is a Roman Catholic theologian.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
For our institutions to open themselves wide enough, or be forced to open themselves wide enough to accept a woman theologian who is Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, we've come a long way, baby.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Vivian, this has been great. Is there anything that you want to add that we haven't talked about?
I'll probably think about it later, but no. But this has been great fun. You know. I'm so in the present and future,
yes.
That my husband was the rememberer.
Oh, yeah. Well, you remembered a lot, I think.
Yeah, so, anyway, you know, we all have our stories, and that's all we have, really.
Yes.
And, you know, and the story in which we all become part of the narrative is really our faith story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you have a rich story. You really do.
I do. I can't imagine me being born to other than the people I was born to.
Yeah.
Because they were so, they allowed us to think whatever we wanted to, you know? And I had a brother who was a younger brother who was a Black Panther.
Really? Oh, wow.
At the same time, Dad was doing his civil rights stuff.
Ah.
And in fact, my dad became quite enamored of the Black Panthers breakfast program. And so the two of them would go around together and make talks. So,
You have, well, I can see why you are the way you are, Vivian. Well. You have you have great roots.
Yeah. I didn't fall, this apple didn't fall far
no,
from the tree.
No, it did not.
It's my mother's. Son. Yes. But you're much nicer than I am.
Oh, well, thank you. That's great. Yeah.